So on to the hopefully most interesting part of this little talk, which is what on earth is conducting anyway, and what do I think I'm doing when I'm standing there doing it? The answer that I've given to most people, particularly those people who say they know nothing about music, and why does this person stand in front of the musicians and gesture, and what on earth is it all about? Is I liken it to theatre direction, which is why I prefer the term musical director to the term conductor, because actually the physical gesture part of it's the kind of delivery end, and of course it's very, very important, but that's just the delivery point of, certainly in my opinion, what should have been an awful lot of research and forethought that's gone into it. And of course, the conductor's work, I think, is largely done in rehearsal. That's the hardest part for me, anyway. I love concerts because there's kind of no going back. You just go for it. But all the toil of rehearsal, I think, is the hardest bit. So the analogy I always give is if you took an amazing acting troupe and you threw open the door of the room and chucked 15 copies of Hamlet on the floor and said go, what would happen? So who would take what part? Where would the drama be set? What scenery would be used? What costume? All those sorts of questions that have to be asked. And I think being a music director is not dissimilar to that. Someone somewhere has to decide how things are going to be done, and that's the job that I think I should be doing. And I think by that I mean it's actually to empower everyone else. The days of the dictator conductor, I think, have been gone for some time. And I don't believe that style truly works in any case. So the idea that it's my job to shout at a group of people or simply demand, that they do every last inch of what I tell them to do, I don't believe in it as a methodology for music making in any case. But also, just I'm not that sort of person, so it'll never be me. I've seen both approaches in my time, both as a player and as someone who's assisted other conductors, and I just know which one I think ultimately produces the more desirable result. And actually, I just remembered something. This is going back a long way. When I was about 16, I started having trombone lessons with the then co-principal at the City of Birmingham Symphony Orchestra, which was my nearest professional orchestra, and I was telling him in a lesson that I also fancy doing some conducting, and he said, "What do you think a conductor does?" He asked it in a very leading way. And I remember at the time answering something along the lines of, I have to take a piece of music that I love, bring it in front of a group of people, and persuade them to do it the way that I like it. And I think I probably still stick largely to that as a kind of the very shortest version of what it is that I do. Something that I've learned the hard way is that I don't try to conduct something that you don't love, and because it'd be very obvious pretty early on to your musician colleagues that your heart doesn't actually beat for this, and you haven't got any great conviction about how to interpret it. So I think that's the sort of first base, actually, is to be genuinely really enthused by that piece of music, because you're quite possibly going to have to try and take some people with you inside every orchestra. Not everyone loves everything you do, of course, and some people I know don't really like Brahms symphonies, for example. There's a lot of intake of breath from lots of people when you say things like that, but it's definitely the truth. So yeah, love it first. And then the next phase that I go through before I get to a room full of people is researching that piece of music as much as I possibly can. And this really does take a lot of time, and you never really stop, even if you come back to the piece 3, 4 years later. There's always something new to be learned, and quite frankly, if I can find out what the composer had for breakfast and what socks they chose to wear on the day that they wrote it, I will try and find that out. But most of the time, we're just faced with these funny splodges of ink on a page, and how do you find your interpretation within that? And something that I've learned over the years I've been doing this is that actually writing music down is a fairly imprecise science, and some composers try to come up with methodologies to give you every last ounce of how to do what was in their heads, Mahler being one of them, for example, and Elgar to a certain extent. But even then, there are so many variables, because the orchestra that's playing in any composer's head, and indeed any conductor's head, is also probably in a perfect acoustic, where everyone's having a great day, and there's no external problems whatsoever, whereas real life presents us with the vagaries of acoustic human beings, and all that sort of stuff. The whole business of conducting, it is a bit of a, I think it is a faux profession. It's a bit of a sham profession. We know that in the 18th century, from things that Mozart left us in his amazing letters, highly recommend reading them, by the way, if you haven't. They're really funny and unexpectedly quite rude. But that we know that quite routinely, the premieres of his operas weren't conducted in the sense that we know it now. People say that it was probably Mendelssohn who was the first person to sort of really make the conductor very distinct from the leader, because really the position grew out of the leader of the orchestra, who would have a bow because they play the violin, and that was where the baton came from. So quite often, I think the further one goes back in music history, the least you need a conductor. And I hate actually now, if you see certain, especially Baroque music, and someone waving their arms in the air in front of it, where in fact, really, they should be sat at a keyboard instrument. And if anyone who's ever heard me play the piano will know, that's not something that I'm good enough to to do. So I do miss out on some repertoire, Baroque and Renaissance, especially, where conductors are just not necessary, quite frankly, which is nice when, with my record producing hat on, I get to do quite a lot of Baroque music, especially, so I do get contact with that genre. But as a conductor, nope, not needed. And of course, it's also about the size of the group. So, for example, if one were to pick out the Dvorak Wind Serenade, now I love that piece dearly, and I've conducted it many times, and quite often the musicians have said, oh, we'd feel a bit uncomfortable without a conductor. But actually, I think it shouldn't be done with a conductor, and I'd encourage anyone I know to be brave enough to try it. What it does take is someone or some individuals from inside that ensemble to sort of take the lead, which is slightly different from taking charge, but just to take the lead to run the rehearsals. But I'm personally a little bit uncomfortable conducting ensembles of fewer than, say, 15 people, and always seek to sack myself from those situations for that reason, wherever possible. So, assuming that I've got a piece of music that I absolutely adore, and I've done all my research, and then I arrive in front of an orchestra, I think that, like I said before, the hardest yards are done in rehearsals, because I've got a huge advantage over everyone else in that room, which is I've got the full score, I've got the full road map, and I don't have to play an instrument during the rehearsal. So I can concentrate on that full road map. And everyone else has got, usually anyway, just kind of single streets within that. So if you imagine going on Google Maps and you could only see the street in which you were walking, trying to work out where you are and what's going on around you is incredibly difficult. And actually, one of the recent technological advances, which I'm hoping will come into orchestral music and music in general, is being able to read from screen, where at a flick, anyone could just quickly look at a full score and understand where their line fits in. And again, conductors could well be made quite obsolete by that sort of technology. But I've got all of that information in front of me, and that's the great advantage of what I do and where I'm stood. And then I think it's very distinct, actually, the whole business of a performance, because you can't recreate performances. They are unique occasions. You'll never, on that date, in that venue, with those people, play that piece ever again. It's a one-off. And although you try not to, or I try not to veer hugely at all from what has been done in the rehearsals, I think you've got to leave an element of chance. Things happen in concerts, we all know that, don't we? A bit of adrenaline kicks in and things go a bit faster than you seem to remember. Or people, everyone, all of us, me included, make sort of silly mistakes because you're a bit nervous or whatever it is. But I love performances because that's where I think, you have to come off the stage of a rehearsal and then come back in again for the performance is kind of different person, quite frankly. And that's the excitement of music making for me. Quite often I've been asked what's the difference between working with professionals and non-professionals. So I'm just going to quickly do a definition. A professional musician is someone who is being paid to do it. They haven't necessarily been professionally trained, believe it or not. And everyone else is not being paid to do it. So I've had experiences where I've had people who've trained to be a professional musician but play in a non-professional orchestra, and people who have not trained to be a professional musician actually being paid to be in a professional orchestral situation. And then you've got youth orchestras, and there are enormous differences between youth orchestras. So for example, I've worked with youth orchestras that have gone up to an age range of 28, so people who've actually been through professional study or still in professional study. Equally, I've done youth orchestras where we're looking at people who are, 12, 13 years old, maybe doing something like grade 5 or 6 in the traditional graded exam system, and have little or no experience of playing in an ensemble at all. But what I found is that there's actually not as much difference as you might imagine between working with all of these types of groups. It really is, everyone is on some form of journey from A to B, and the distance between A and B might be huge in the case of, I don't know, a very inexperienced youth orchestra, and sort of narrow in the case of a very experienced professional orchestra. But the basic challenges are actually exactly the same, and it comes down, in my opinion, to the musicians knowing or understanding what's going on around them. It's not necessarily about their individual part, it's whether or not they've understood where they fit into the whole. And I've been to professional orchestral concerts where whatever's happened in rehearsal or whatever's happened on the stage in the performance, it's obvious that there have been people playing with no regard for what's been going on around them, as in, just it's in the wrong place. Not subtle, just in the wrong place. And that's not a mistake, that's a kind of not caring. And it's probably not the musician's fault, it's probably the conductor's actually. And equally, I've been at performances by youth orchestras and non-professional orchestras where I've been falling off my seat in admiration at the quality of the music making, the understanding of ensemble. And I think it's really important to say that there are some pretty bad professional orchestras around. Probably not as many as there used to be, but you can still go and hear a bunch of people who've been paid to play and it won't sound good. And equally, you can go and hear a bunch of people who are paying to play, and they can sound absolutely amazing. But I think where there is a distinction is that if you walk into a room with a bunch of people who can basically play all the notes and understand all the rhythms straight away and are probably going to play pretty well in tune, or if it's not in tune the first time around, it probably will be the second time around. It's a different sort of psychological thing that you're trying to do. So most professional orchestras, particularly in this country, if you're on a piece of standard repertoire, let's say, I don't know, a Shostakovich symphony or a Beethoven symphony, they're just going to know it. And they've played it many times, and they'll probably just play it like they played it the last time they did it, unless you can persuade them otherwise. And I think what really is the challenge with working with professionals is to get them to change something that they've always done, and giving them a jolly good reason for doing it. Because particularly in that situation, although I have to say also in, non-professional orchestras, but particularly in a professional orchestral situation, everyone there knows how to play their instrument an awful lot better than you do, the conductor being you. And why should they play it louder, softer, longer, shorter, or whatever? You need to be have the strength of your and courage of your convictions to get a group of people to change the way that they play. And I think that another truth about being a conductor is that it's a lot to do with corporate chemistry. So, famously, well, relatively famously anyway, when Sir Simon Rattle, before he was a sir, when he was busy pulling up trees and becoming famous at the CBSO back in the 1980s, the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam heard rumours of this sort of amazing young conductor, and particularly his affinity with the music of Gustav Mahler. So they thought, well, get him in, let's get him over. And this is all a matter of record, by the way, from the conductor himself. Turns up, dream thing to go and do. I think it was Mahler 9, with the Concertgebouw in their amazing hall. But within about a minute, both orchestra and conductor realised that this was not going to go well. They just did not get one another at all, and apparently the whole thing was a total disaster. And I don't think he ever went back to work with that group, even though he did clearly go on to do some rather good things afterwards. And I think that it's just the same as dating. If you've been on a blind date any time recently, or not even recently like me, you'll remember, you kind of know within a couple of minutes whether there's a spark of chemistry there or not. But the difference is with orchestras, you have got such varying personality types and opinions. But the kind of corporate dynamic of an orchestra, for conductors, it's really important to kind of try and work that out quite early on. So does that group of people respond better to a long lecture about your opinions of the music? Because some do. Or do they want to hear as little out of your mouth as possible and just get on with it? And I've worked with groups who are very much like that. How much carrot and stick do they enjoy humour, or think that if you're telling jokes, you're being flippant? It's judging the room, basically. And to that end, I would say there's a great book about, well, it's not about conducting, that's the whole point, but I always recommend it to conductors. So this is potentially slightly left field, but there's a book that I was bought by a friend who knows that I'm interested in cricket. I'm not a cricket nerd, and I've never played at a proper anything like a proper level. I find it an interesting game. I wouldn't call myself a fanatic. And it's a book by Mike Brearley, who was an England captain in the 1980s, and it's called The Art of Captaincy. And if you're not at all interested in cricket, you'd have to skip past the odd chapter on field placements to get anything from this book. But anyone who's interested in the overall idea of leadership of any group of people, I think should read this book. And that could be conductors, it could be managers of people at any level. And it kind of deals with how to try and assess a group of people and what their corporate dynamic is and how to get the best out of them. And Mike Brady was, people may know this and know much more about him than I do, but basically he wasn't the greatest player at that period in British cricket history. He wasn't the best batsman, bowler, or fielder or anything, but he did have an ability to lead people. And there's one particularly interesting tale within this book that I think sums it all up for me. And it was to do with the famous Ian Beefy Botham, and his very famous test played, pretty sure it was at Headingley, against the Australians. And England were being absolutely hammered by the Aussies. I think day one or day two, it was pretty much, no one would have bet any money on England getting anything out of the game whatsoever. And Beefy had gone out to a party after the game, and the next morning came back reported for duty at the cricket ground and clearly hadn't been to bed. And Mike Brearley spotted him and basically said to him, "Look, well, doesn't matter what we do today, I have no tactics because we're gonna lose. Simple as that." And apparently, at which point Ian Botham went absolutely ballistic. I think he might have even pinned Brearley up against the wall and said, "What do you mean we're gonna lose?" And then walked out on the field and famously single-handedly destroyed the Aussies and brought us possibly the most, until very recently anyway, famous English cricket victory of all time. And I guess the lesson that I would learn from that is that in the whole business of trying to motivate and inspire people, that's as much the conductor's job as it is being hopefully the best musician you can possibly be. So be the best musician you can be with a passion for the music, with having done your research, done your hard work before you arrive in front of people, and then regardless of with whom you're working, see if you can find what it is that inspires people, but also accept that not every conductor can inspire every group of people, and sometimes the best conductor orchestra relationships have worked just between that individual and that organisation.